B-Pod Studios.
It's a new day. Yes, it is. What's going on, y'all? This is WWE superstar Kofi Kingston, and you are listening to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, baby!
Mike Riley is off getting plastered for his birthday. Happy birthday, Mike Riley. Hope that you drink a lot of water. Hydrate often while you drink your booze. It'll help your hangover the next day. Joining me this week, two men who I have the utmost respect for. I have the pleasure of calling friends. I do miss Chris and Eddie, formerly known as Jason and Liam. They were the New Age Insiders. They did a weekly podcast, which I miss, and I hope comes back again soon. Chris, I'll start with you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. What I hope is that, like, not that we're at all this important, but I hope that being a New Age Insider is like a Marine thing where they say, like, you're never an ex-Marine, you're just retired. So I hope that, like, I'm never a former New Age Insider. I hope that's a permanent thing. But thank you so much, Jimmy. It's always awesome to be here. We love you. We love this show. And we thank you so much for the time.
Eddie, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Now that I get to vent about a bunch of things that I've been wanting to vent about and don't have a Wednesday night at 8 o'clock platform anymore.
No, but you have my platform at least a few times a year, and I'm happy to have you guys. Maybe those New Age Insider tattoos might be a thing.
I have one.
I do not, but I don't have any tattoos.
I have one.
I'm tattooless as well. I texted Chris and Eddie this week, and I asked them what they wanted to talk about on the show this week. And they both mentioned the potential sale of WWE. We all think it's coming. We all feel it's coming. But to whom and when is kind of whether it's NBC Universal, they have a Universal champion, whether it's Disney, we're not sure. But my guess, and it's just a guess, the sale leak will come somewhere after 100,000 people, quote unquote, fill up Dallas Stadium. It's Roman Reigns, we think, against The Rock. We'll see. And it'll be somewhere after the WWE gets their next TV deal. To me, the leader in the clubhouse is NBC Universal. They have the streaming rights to WWE Network. They have Raw. They have NXT. Roman Reigns is the Universal champion. Chris, I'll start with you. Chat me up on your thoughts on the potential sale of WWE.
So the biggest thing with WWE is we have to kind of separate, and it's difficult sometimes, I know, but you almost have to separate yourself as a fan and somebody that understands how they operate as a business, because as we've been told in documentaries and interviews countless times, that this is a business. They make business decisions, and you can go into the show with all your heart, leading with your heart. But they're going to do what makes the most sense for business at the end of the day. Most of the stuff they talked about with Daniel Bryan and Best for Business was shoot stuff. But anyway, and it really appears to me that as a fan, when you see these roster cuts, because, you know, I'm going to defer to Eddie on things like the network and stuff, because that's a point that he's made, you know, weeks ago. And he's right. And I want him to expound on that. But to me, the roster cuts are what stand out the most, because as a fan, you could be like, oh man, I can't believe that they cut Bray Wyatt, right? That's a huge one to me. And you have to separate yourself from a fandom, because even if you didn't like the performer, if you loved the performer, what you can understand, I think anyone can understand, is they really invested a lot of time in that guy. Expensive vignettes, you know, things like letting John Cena film the what would your life have been if you went down this road thing at WrestleMania, which was amazing, by the way. But they kind of let this guy have a lot of creative control. He's a multi-time champion. He's headlined WrestleManias, etc. And to just let him go, to just say thanks, bye, to a guy you've invested that much in, to me, if I'm trying to rationalize that, it's a business decision. He didn't hurt anybody. He didn't mouth off in an interview. There really doesn't seem any wrestling reasons why you'd let that guy go. To me, he probably makes a lot of money, and probably the vignettes and the Sister Abigail stuff and the Firefly Funhouse is expensive compared to what other wrestlers, you know, cost for a return on investment, whatever. So you let a guy like that go, because you want your books to look as attractive as possible to potential sellers, and chopping guys like Braun Strowman, a lot of filler talent at NXT, and a guy like Bray Wyatt, that to me doesn't seem like a wrestling decision. It really seems like a business decision, and one with all the reasons you listed that just, again, if the big, like, it's Occam's razor, where the simple,
but not Occam and Razor,
right? Exactly. Not Cligland and Autopsy, not Occam and Razor. They're cut too. It's the simplest explanation is probably right. And to me, it just seems like, okay, this is how much we spend. This is how much we make. Let's make that as attractive as possible. And to me, I don't know. I don't know. I thought Vince McMahon would die on the boat. But maybe things have changed, and I believe that they have.
Eddie, what do you think?
So they came out like a few months ago and said that 2020 was their most profitable year ever. And immediately my ears just started burning because I was like, that can't be right. You're a live events company that did not put on live events in 2020.
Yeah, right.
How did you make more money than you ever made before? You know, and it feels like one of those like shell games where, you know, you hear about these billion-dollar corporations all the time. Take your pick: Disney, Amazon, FedEx, UPS, whatever. You know, like, just take your pick, where they're like, yeah, we paid taxes, and they, like, in their books it all seems right, but we all know that that's not true. You know, and it felt similar to that. And the big one to me was, you sold the WWE network, right? You had the proprietary streaming network. And I will say, probably the most important streaming network, because we don't get things like Disney Plus, Paramount Plus, or HBO Max without the WWE network. You know, in a documentary that I'll make 10 years from now about how important that and MoviePass was to the entertainment industry, you know, we'll be on the lookout for that. But if your company is having the most profitable year that they've ever had, and you're the most successful you've ever been, you do not sell your proprietary streaming service. You just don't. That, like, to me, that is the biggest of red flags. And I was a part of a company. I worked for a company called Borrow Lenses, which was an online camera rental company where you go online, you would rent something, they would ship it to you, they'd give you a box, you ship it back, right? And when I was with the company, it was like a small business. Like, there was one owner, he was in the office, you could see him, he was there. And then one day things started changing and they started dumping high-level salary people. And like, they were just like letting people go out of the blue, and it was weird, and people were just wandering through the warehouse, and they started making upgrades to like visually important things, but not infrastructurally important things, if that makes sense. And so all of a sudden it felt weird. And then they're like, hey, this is the most profitable we've ever been. You guys are doing so great. Oh, it's so fantastic. And then, you know, a month later they were sold to Shutterfly, which they are now a part of the Shutterfly brand, and they're doing great. But that's how it feels with WWE, right? You sell off this huge, important piece in the WWE network, and then you start cutting ancillary talent, right? And it just makes it seem like you're just making as much money as humanly profitable, as humanly possible, in order to look as attractive as possible to somebody like NBC Universal or Disney. I think the leader in the clubhouse is NBC Universal.
Same here.
I watch a lot of Disney parks related content. One of the people that I noticed, and I noticed this in his video, and it wasn't a highlight of by any point. He was actually talking about Halloween Horror Nights, but it was Tim Tracker, right? Very prominent parks YouTube personality. And they were showing a backstage area with one of the studios that is at Universal Studios in Orlando. And plastered on the side of it is a huge WWE banner with Roman Reigns on it. And for the life of me, I have no idea why you would be advertising that in Universal Studios Orlando. You don't film there. You didn't host the Thunderdome. That wasn't a thing. And so it just feels like they're starting to play ball a little bit more with each other, which I think is greasing the skids for a sale.
It makes the most sense to me if it's NBC Universal as well. Jimmy, I didn't even really think about the Universal Championship before, but I mean, Not that that was intentional, but I mean, talk about just how easily does that, you know, shoe just slide on anyway, you know what I mean? And it just, to me, it feels like an NBC Universal kind of thing, more so than a Disney thing. I would think if Disney wanted to get into wrestling, they would have by now, because Impact has been down the street for 10 years, 15 years. Right. And if Disney wanted to just say, hey, they're already right there, we can buy their building, we can just do that, you know, I think they would have jumped in by now, because I could see Disney wanting to bite off more of an apple the size, or take a bite out of an apple more the size of Impact, than suddenly being responsible for a billion-dollar traveling circus with all these moving parts and all these people. Like, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe and Star Wars is one thing, but WWE is like multiple people's full-time job, including all the people they manage. And so maybe Impact with a one location, one thing, whatever. The point is, NBC Universal, SmackDown just feels like something they'd be all about. It's glitzy, it's glamorous, there's huge production value to the sets now. I could easily see them wanting to incorporate wrestlers into the theme park, or maybe bring the NXT experience from Full Sail to the to Universal Studios Orlando, so they could have tapings there and sell tickets there. And I could just see it being a very attractive thing for them. And I just think it, with them being more movies, TV, almost exclusive, whereas Disney's just like, if it makes money, we'll do it. And you can't discount the fact that they've already started this process, if you really think about it. Like Eddie said, they sold a huge chunk of their soul, which was that network, to NBC Universal. I don't think that it's a coincidence that they sold it, because I think they're trying to, you know, maybe slide all the chips on the, you know, to the table now. And the other thing too is, it's not a coincidence that they sold it to them. You know, they already have a relationship now. You know, I the more we talk about it, almost feels like we're talking about when and not if.
Well, think about how long they've had that relationship with NBC Universal in different ways, whether it be USA Networks, parent company, and so on and so on. The Universal Championship thing actually made me think of how many times you've dumped on AEW for calling it the TNT title, and now they're going to TBS. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
they can't sell the Disney now, because then it becomes the Disney Championship.
I'm trying very hard to speak positively of AEW, because I do think they do some things well.
I know, we'll get there. We'll get there. Don't worry.
And I don't want to like have my friends and fan listeners or whatever, you know, be like, wow, you only talk badly about them. Because it's mostly bad. I get it. But it is stupid to name your championship after a TV channel. And yeah,
for the first time back on TNT. Oh, yeah.
You can't be the Universal Champion, yeah, pal. You got to be the Magic Kingdom champion. I'm putting years
but,
on. Thanks.
Do you guys think that Vince is looking to sell? One, because of his age. Two, because he doesn't think the kids want it. Like Stephanie and Shane, they kind of want it, but they don't want to fully want it. Do you think three, that he's a live events promoter? He's the circus guy. Live events pre-pandemic were in a total downfall, and he kind of got lucky with these TV deals. And so maybe he's not sure about the future of live events, or he's not sure he's going to get a new TV deal.
Yeah, I think the reality is that you're talking about...
And then he goes belly up with his creation, and I don't think he'd want to go belly up with his creation.
Right. I think that you're talking about a man who is 75 years old, who looks and appears to be 95. And, you know, if I'm him, you're 100% right. There's a global pandemic that's happening. It halted my live events. You know, you have people that are speculating that the Thunderdome might be back sooner than you think because of the Delta variant and all of this other nonsense. And so it's like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I just want to sell, bow out. And then that way, if it does tank, it's not on me. And yeah, maybe I'm 75 years old, you know, pushing 1,000, and I want to enjoy the last 25 years of my life.
So what I believe is a little differently. I think I think that Vince McMahon would, quote unquote, go down with the ship, knowing that like live events and all that stuff are suffering, because you're, everything you said is incredibly valid. I just believe that, like, that guy has such hubris that he believes that he can beat the pandemic, beat all the odds. I did it before. The Thunderdome worked. Look, you know, no fans, but we kept going. Like, I just think that guy believes he can do anything. What I believe is, I'm going to compare it to, you compared it to your old job. I'm going to compare it to the job I have now. I work for a small family car dealership. It was started by a grandfather who gave it to a father who gave it to a son who's my boss now.
Chris, if you'd like to promote said auto dealership, by all means, the forum is yours.
Washington Street Motors in Weymouth, 646 Washington Street in Weymouth. It's a third generation family dealership. Great cars, great people. We treat you the right way. WSMotors.com is my website. I'd be happy to help you out. That's my plug. Thank you, Jimmy.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Lovely. But we work a lot.
When I'm here, I'm the radio professional. In the
you're terrific, and thank you for again plugging Washington Street Motors in Weymouth, the best used cars in all of New England at Washington Street Motors in Weymouth.
And ask for Chris, and Chris will give you a deal.
And I sure will. If you mention the show, I will. but the point is that we work a lot, right? We work 6 days a week. I average between 55 and 60 hours a week, right? I'm well compensated, but you work a lot, right? And what I think is, what I've seen is from the father giving it to the son, who's my boss now, like I said, my boss now hopes, you'd think it'd be like, oh, he hopes to give it to his son one day. And my boss doesn't want that, because he works so much and so many hours that he hopes his son finds something different that allows him some more freedoms and things like that. And he would love, you know, he'd have no problem making it a fourth generation business one day. But if you're going to do it and own that place, you have to know you're going to work a lot, and a considerable amount of your life is going to be at Washington Street Motors. And what I believe, Jimmy, is you're right about the point where if Stephanie and Shane, because I don't think that he looks at Triple H the same way as Stephanie and Shane. How could he? If they don't want to be the, you're on the road 300 days a year, always backstage, managing talent, so many moving parts, PR. If you don't really, really want this, then I don't even want to give it to you. Not out of spite, but because it's so much work. And if you love it, you had a passion for it, then yeah, let's do this. But if you don't, then I might as well just sell the place. We all make our money. Look what we did. And the hubris of Vince McMahon is not washed away, because what he can do is say, in 1998, I was almost bankrupt. In 1984, people told me that WrestleMania would cost me my house. And today, I sold this rinky-dink traveling circus, wrestling, you make fun of me, for $3
billion. $6 billion.
Yeah, there you go.
$6 billion is the number, I think.
There you go. And look at me. I am an entertainment mogul that I've always wanted to be, because I, you know, sold the most lucrative wrestling business ever, whatever, whatever. So his ego doesn't even really take a hit, because it's not like he had to file something. And, you know, it's not WCW where they were like, nobody want, you know, it's over, and got picked up on the scraps. He'll sell this for a premium. His family will do well. I'm sure if Stephanie wants some, you know, job, she can have it. And if Triple H wants to be involved with talent, I'm sure he can be. But yeah, if being Vince McMahon, I'm sure has been very hard. And if him not wanting that life for them, you know, the world is much different than the 70s, 80s, 90s, when this guy was just like, probably finding a way to put in 25 hours a day. It's a different world. They're all different people. So that's why I think he's more open to sell, is because it's just like, you know, hey, we're all old now. Do we really want to keep doing this?
There's the Triple H variable here. And I have seen the reporting from Meltzer saying that Vince, Bruce, and Michael Hayes and probably somebody else, Johnny Laurinaitis, went down NXT. They came back and they're like, we're cutting these guys. And that was the releases that happened on Friday. I've heard that Vince gives Triple H a hard time about how he runs NXT because there's kind of the Dusty Rhodes vision of NXT, which is we're preparing characters for the main roster. And you see what Dusty Rhodes' NXT contributions have been to the main roster. And once Dusty passed, it kind of became Triple H's version of the super indie to go against Ring of Honor, to go against AEW. Well, he beat Ring of Honor. Triple H beat Ring of Honor. Triple H lost AEW. So is Vince McMahon now looking like, you know, son, we like you, but you know, you lost to the football owner who sat in the ECW arena and is basically doing ECW on a bigger budget right now.
I don't think
that might play a role in it too.
I don't think it's unfair to say to Triple H. So to be fair to Triple H, if you had given me the keys to the entire roster like Roman Reigns, I bet I had a shot at beating AEW. But to Triple H's detriment, there is something to be said about, well, we and I'm included. Oh, NXT is the coolest thing in wrestling. The best thing in wrestling is NXT. If they actually were like getting in a weekly show with attention, oh my God, NXT's the best. NXT's the best. And as somebody who's not a giant AEW guy, I can't deny that in the, you know, quote unquote ratings war, they were cooler than NXT or whatever. At least I know ratings are so hard to calculate now because there's like people watching it days later and there was a network involved and AEW doesn't have that, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you'd think it would be closer or that they would have, you know, squeaked them out and AEW was the cooler show or whatever. And again, yeah, they had Chris Jericho while Triple H had, you know, Karrion Kross, but yeah, it is what it is. You know,
yeah,
I mean?
The tough part about NXT too is that by its design, it gets kneecapped regularly, right? Because imagine if you had Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair and you had actually, you know, had some of these talents, and you know, those two are actually prominent on the main roster, but you had these.
How about the Viking Raiders doing nothing on the main roster?
Right.
And should have been in NXT way longer.
Right. There are so many people that got called up way too soon because they start to get popular on NXT and they get taken away. And so it's like, yeah, you know, it's never going to fight head to head with AEW because you keep taking the talent. I mean, even Karrion Kross, that guy got injured and that was a whole thing. But, you know, he comes back and then is immediately up to the main roster. Imagine if Karrion Kross and Keith Lee were still prevalent in NXT right now.
If you had done anything with Donovan Dijak instead of making him part of the stupidest group in years.
Right.
And now he's in a tag team and just getting himself over online because no one else is doing it.
I have never understood how a guy 6'7" with the talent of Donovan Dijak,
right,
he hasn't been in a more featured position other than his match with Keith Lee for the North American title at a takeover in Portland.
Yeah, and then
biggest match, and he should have had more. He's always supposed to have more. Ring of Honor mishandled him too, and I don't get it.
Yeah, it's crazy because
it's
guy
personal to us, by the way.
It absolutely is. I mean, the guy is, you know, he eats, breathes, and sleeps WWE. I mean, we were one of his first interviews way back in the day. And if you go to the New Age Insiders YouTube channel, it's still up there. You can listen to it. And it's fascinating. But he talks about it there where it's like WWE was always the goal. I'm going to do whatever I have to do to, you know, make it work there. And so the guy has passion for the business. And yeah, when you just didn't make that guy a star, right? Like in NXT, you didn't even try with him.
You didn't even try. That's the thing is that I don't. So I look at Karrion Kross and I'm thinking, why was this not Donovan Dijak? Like, to be honest with you, I'm not sure either one of them needed the entrance and every, like, that's a lot. But if you're going to give that to one of those two guys, at least Donovan Dijak looks the part. I don't know what it is about Karrion Kross to me, but he just looks so some guy-ish to me that I just can't believe how much like of an immediate priority he was. And still,
the entrance with Scarlett is great. Then the bell rings.
Yeah. Right?
And that's it.
And if you gave that to Donovan Dijak and, or whatever, Dominic Dijakovic, if you had given him something like that, to just, what does that tell you? If you're a fan, like to me, right, when I saw Karrion Kross's entrance for the first time, I said, I don't know if this guy's any good, but I can tell they're in. You know right. what I mean? Because you don't do that unless you're in on this guy. You know what I mean? Like, this is presentation-wise, this is a lot. And so if you had given Dominic Dijakovic, you know, three quarters of that and some wins and just, I just feel like you didn't try at all. And we know he has some weaknesses. I don't think I've ever heard him cut a spectacular promo, if I'm being honest with you.
Sure.
But there's got to be more there than isn't. And for the lack of effort, it's just like, give him a beautiful woman with an hourglass, you know what I mean? And see what he can do. You know what I mean? Like, seriously, I just don't think you try.
Or give him a tag team partner who can talk, and then you split the team. Cause we've been at shows where they're doing the feast your eyes thing.
Yeah. Right.
So they know.
We know.
We're fans too. We know.
He also has the potential where it's just like, you know, guys, you know, he's 6 foot, whatever, you know, 200 and whatever, can do all these front flips and springboards. And it's just like, yeah. And then maybe he's not The Rock, but he's the guy that we always compared him to when we used to talk to him on the air and stuff like that. To me, he's Mike Awesome. You look at him and you're like, yeah, of course he can powerbomb you. But then he flips over the front rope and you're like, I didn't see that coming. And right. Mike Awesome spent 15 years in the business and never cut a good promo. And ECW was like, it doesn't matter. Look at this dude. And I just don't understand why these promotions just can't get more out of that much raw talent.
You know, and then you look at something that's currently happening with another person that we absolutely love, and that's Carmelo Hayes, right?
Yeah.
Christian Casanova.
Carmelo.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you look top at somebody talent, like, man. He's so good. He is so good. You know, it's funny because
also just a great person, a very, yeah. very good, very, very good guy.
You know,
I think they're in on him, by the way.
They
I
are.
I believe but that Shawn Michaels has taken a very strong liking to him. So if he's really being coached up by Shawn Michaels, then that's a good sign.
Well, it's like that's the thing is Chris was talking about how Donovan Dijakovic didn't get the presentation stuff, right? He didn't get the presentation stuff, so you could tell that he wasn't a big deal. The biggest thing in Dijakovic's career down in NXT was he played the Apollo Creed role in that Rocky storyline that they were doing where Karrion Kross just murdered him, right? And Keith Lee had to like throw in the towel. Carmelo Hayes, right? Christian Casanova, he challenges he challenges
Adam Cole
in a, you know, a crazy, you know, open challenge and goes toe to toe and highlights him, you know, and he's just being put in those prominent spots. He's doing really, really well in that tournament that they have, that like futures tournament that they're doing, yep. You know, beat another, you know, another guy that we know in Josh Briggs in the first round. So, you know, you can tell it's like, oh, this guy is a spotlight guy for them. You know, now maybe he's a little bit more what they're looking to turn NXT into, because NXT for a while turned into, you know, the super indies. It was a PWG show on steroids, you know, for anybody that followed PWG.
And we loved it
in the like 20 teens, you know, because all of these guys were here. And I think that that's just not the wrestling company that Vince McMahon wants. And you know, it stinks because a lot of those guys are talented. Outside of Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman, I don't think that WWE is going to miss them. You know, they just never prioritized any of those characters. So I don't think you're going to be looking at it and being like, wow, WWE really missed out outside of those two. But I do think that it's going to give AEW a huge injection. But then that's going to kind of talk about my CM Punk take that I've been teasing and people want to hear later on in this show.
No, Eddie, do it now.
Back. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
So give me your CM Punk pipe bomb. Yeah. Tie it all together to the sale of WWE and AEW.
So basically, the counter argument is that all of these talent, because anytime one of the talents that people know or have been spotlit in WWE at any point, they're going to go to AEW, right? And the problem is that AEW is rapidly going to lose the initial shine that they had a couple of years ago, right? The fun part about AEW in the beginning was that it was all of these English speaking talent that were everywhere else. They were in Ring of Honor, which you know, the Ring of Honor refuses to actually, even though they're owned by a media company, refuse to actually make their product easy to find or active on social media. It's insane.
There's a reason for that.
Oh, of course there is. But then New Japan, unless you like really seek it out, it is easier to find, but it's still difficult. There's a lot of Japanese speaking talent. It can be an easy turn off for casual American fans. So to have talents like Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks that you've heard about for years, to be able to come into this place that was extremely easily accessible was great. And then they had that original Impact TNA vibe where it was like, look, you have Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega and Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks, and I know who all these guys are. But then, oh my God, MJF, you're really talented. Oh my God, Darby Allin, you're also really talented. And over the last year, they have done everything that Chris Jericho said they weren't going to do in the beginning and keep signing like anybody and everybody that was a WWE cast off. Some are obvious, of course, you're going to sign that guy, but that's what ends up bringing CM Punk out of retirement. And my thesis is that CM Punk is a huge hypocrite for going to AEW. I'm excited to see him. So I do need to say that, like, if CM Punk is going to come out of retirement and wrestle, I am excited to see that.
Can I just say, because I want to just say, it doesn't make him a hypocrite. It makes him a huge loser. But keep going, because definitely want to talk about this with you.
So he's a huge hypocrite because we just celebrated the pipe bomb anniversary, and everybody talked about how like things in WWE never changed. But the thesis of the pipe bomb was that he has worked his ass off for like every day. And Dwayne The Rock Johnson is going to come from outer space in main event WrestleMania. And he believes that that is going to be that's his spot that Dwayne is, you know, helicoptering in from out of nowhere to take. And by going to AEW, you're just doing that because, yeah, you know, Chris Jericho isn't going to be affected and Kenny Omega is not going to be affected. But you know who's going to be affected is MJF. Because he is also allowed, like, I'll say anything heel, which is exactly what CM Punk is, or that was his whole motif and everything. And so those people are going to get pushed down the card. And now the people that were the exciting young talent are going to be held down because you are just going to come in because you feel like I've done and gone and failed at UFC and I can't do that anymore. And I can't, write comic books. And the shine of CM Punk, the wrestler, has worn off because you haven't wrestled in 10 years. And so, yeah, you're going to just kind of basically do the same thing that you said said in the pipe bomb.
I just want to jump in because I have super strong feelings about CM Punk. And I both agree with you and part Rhodes a little bit with you. He is the ultimate, ultimate, ultimate hypocrite. Because everything you said is very true. Because it's not about like one show. It's about like, that's a great point about how like, hi, I'm MJF and my identity is being the smart ass. Is that your identity here? Clearly people are going to pay more attention to you immediately than me. But the point is, he's the ultimate, ultimate hypocrite if he goes back to WWE. Because he looked the Rock in the eye and was just like, I hate the fact that you're never here. And when you come back, all of a sudden it's like you're in the main event because you want it and you think you deserve it because of things you did in the past. And if he had gone back to the WWE, then it's the single, you could take that and bottle it and put it on a shelf and be like, if you ever need to see the definition of hypocrisy, here it is, because he's been gone for 7.5 years. Let's just say he comes back to main event the next WrestleMania. That's 8 years. And of course, he would only come back if he was promised to main event WrestleMania. That's why he had his little temper tantrum in the first place. So that would have to be it. And he'd have to beat Triple H. And it would have to be all about him. And it would have to be the CM Punk WrestleMania. And well, that's what The Rock did. Only the difference is The Rock came back and eventually even put a guy over. And I know I really hate to be the one to tell you this. You're not The Rock. And so that would be the hypocrisy defined. This going to AEW, to me, there is some real hypocrisy there because of what he'll affect the roster. And you're right. But to me, and I mean this, and I'm not a CM Punk guy. I used to be. I'm not anymore. This is the I can't get away from it anymore. I failed. What I set out to do post wrestling was to become something other than a wrestler, an artist, a UFC fighter,
an actor.
An actor, a Walking Dead panelist with an opinion you should care about. Just anything he did, he fell unbelievably short. And people were telling me, like, well, at least he chased his dreams. Oh, yeah. Well, great. And his whole UFC dream, like, two fights lasted like a combined 37 seconds, and he got his face smashed in. His brain probably still hurts. But the point is, I don't forget when CM Punk first signed up for the UFC, and he pulled that thing where he got to finally sit at the cool kid table at lunch, and all he did was crap all over his former friends. And he didn't, I'm not talking about by name, because he didn't even talk about WWE. He said wrestling. Wrestling's fake. Wrestling's dumb. Why would wrestling help me with this? It's stupid. Like, they've changed. Wrestling's dumb now. There's TVs everywhere. Like, he didn't talk about Vince. He didn't talk about Hunter. He didn't talk about WWE. He kept saying wrestling because he was in a room full of real fighters that probably thought wrestling was stupid. And so he adapted to the room and became, you know what I mean? And wrestling got you there. And my favorite bad guy in movie history is Thanos. And all I can think of is just a meme where Thanos, picture Thanos sitting there at the last scene of Endgame. And instead of Thanos' head, it's just the word wrestling. And then here comes CM Punk. And it's, you could not live with your failures. And where did that bring you? Back to me. So I thought wrestling was dumb and fake and stupid, and it changed. And now you're such a loser at everything else you do that now you have to come crawling back for your last big paycheck and your last chance at relevancy. So there is a hypocritical element to this. And if he was coming back to the WWE, I would do a one-man show about how much of a bastard he is for doing this.
Yeah.
But to me, this is just the white flag. I tried to be something other than a wrestler, and I can't. This is what I am. And, you know, all of those instances where you crapped all over the thing that made you who you are. I mean, your name isn't CM Punk, you nerd. You know what I mean? Like, that's your wrestling name. Like, you're such a dork. And, like, I just think that him going back to wrestling is the Thanos moment where it's like, yep, this is who you were. And did you get out of your system, you crybaby? And now you're, you know, whatever. I don't respect the guy.
I would feel so much better if he went back to WWE than AEW. Oh, right?
I think that's worse.
I think it's better because at least there's the story of I am coming back and there's money to be made there because the prodigal son returns.
If he goes there, it's just for him. It's so much worse.
Oh yeah, but because you look at AEW and it's like, so what's it's all the points you were just making, right? why are you, after all this time, coming to AEW? Like, what is there in AEW that makes you want to come back to wrestling all of a sudden?
Tony Khan hit the magic number.
That is it.
That's exactly what it is.
It's his last.
He didn't hit it in 2019.
That's it. He failed at everything else.
In 2019, he did StarCast, Conrad Thompson's fan fest event. That was AEW's, the crowning of their first world champion. And everybody's like, oh, well, he's doing StarCast. He's going to go and do the wrestling show. That's going to happen. He said at his appearance, he wasn't going to. He was going to go home and watch whatever, college football, probably Blackhawks championship DVD with his wife that night. He did not. He went to the after party. He went to the StarCast after pay-per-view party.
Sure.
So he did that. But somewhere around that weekend, there was a meeting with Cody and Tony Khan, and they had a bad negotiation. That was everything that came out of that. Was there was a bad negotiation. I think it was they didn't hit the right number. Now they've hit the right number. And I think part of that is this Rampage show. Like, right. I think of AEW as more of ECW with a budget. Sure. I know there are people who say, oh, it's WCW 2. The WCW 2 comparison comes into play where Nitro is doing just fine as a two-hour show. Now we're going to add a third hour, and oh, by the way, you're going to have another show on another night on a different network.
Yep.
Right.
Now, here comes AEW needing more talent for this 10 o'clock show on a Friday night, which most fans have probably already watched SmackDown, or they're watching it the next day, DVR, whatever. But now you've got to give them a reason. You've got to give wrestling fans a reason to watch 10 o'clock on Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that they had to reach that CM Punk number to get there.
That's the biggest problem, because they're running into the problem that I have with WWE as a content provider now. The brand split needs to end, right? Like, there are too many hours of WWE programming, and part of why the New Age Insiders ended was because it was like, there's just too much. There's too much content that you want me to care about, and it's all garbage. Because instead of giving me at 3 hours of good content, you're giving me 10 of terrible content. And that's just too much. That's just too much time, you know? And it's the same thing with AEW, where it's like, look, you have the good show on Wednesday. You picked a time where it made a lot of sense for you to do it, because even though Raw is garbage at the moment, if you went head to head with Raw, you would lose, right? Just because of habit. No other reason than habit. So you go to Wednesday, where it was easier for those fans to switch over to, you know, other indie darlings, right? You know, because if you're an Adam Cole fan, you're likely a Young Bucks fan, right? There's a huge, I'm not saying it's a full circle, but that Venn diagram is pretty big. So it's easy to make that switch. And you're asking them to now do Dark, which is their YouTube show, which has more stuff. You still want them to care about being the Elite, which doesn't need to exist if you have all of this programming on actual television. And now you want me to have an hour show after SmackDown. So I'm supposed to, like, basically get hyped up on SmackDown and then be so hyped up on wrestling that I then tune to TBS to watch your show, or TNT, whichever one it's supposed to be on. And it's just like, man, part of the reason why you're exciting is because you don't have a pay-per-view every month. You have one every couple of months, maybe like once a quarter. And so your pay-per-view shows feel bigger, right? You don't have as much content spread out through the week that I have to care about. So it's more must-see when you do have a big match like what they're doing with Jericho. I love the Jericho MJF stuff, where he's basically putting Jericho through a gauntlet of up-and-coming talent. It's kind of an extension in a very different way of what Cody was doing with his open challenge, right? So you're finding ways to have your program be exciting, but the more hours you put into it, the less exciting it is, because the less gimmicks you can put into it, and you have Sheamus versus Cesaro every week for 57 weeks.
Yeah, I agree. Like, so with AEW, right, this is the, I'm trying to incorporate more, like, what are they doing well into my dialogue about them? Because I'm trying to be a more positive person. But the other thing, too, is if
every you do single, you. You do well, you. You give me your best take, okay?
But I will. But, like, if every single thing about them I say is bad, then people eventually I lose credibility because I just turn
that's into okay. We'll call you the Vulture of Wrestling.
I was just going to say I turned into Adam Jones. I was just going to say I turned into Adam Jones. I was just going to say that. But so here's the thing about AEW, right? There are things that are very cool and very unique about them that WWE will never do because they don't want to do it. Like bringing in Nick Gage and stuff like that just to – is that his name, Nick Gage? The,
yes.
The, yeah, right? Yes. So
the Deathmatch King.
Somebody like that they might
pizza bring cutters. In. They do blood and guts. We don't do blood and guts here.
No, really. The only light bulbs we use are for 1 billion LEDs. But with bringing in a guy like that is very cool because it's almost like what you like what Eddie said is exactly right. It's kind of an extension of the Cody Rhodes Open Challenge, but it's almost like everything we kind of hoped secretly in our deepest hearts that the John Cena Open Challenge would be, which is just like, who's going to challenge John Cena for the championship this week? And, you know, oh my God, it's, you know, Keith Lee before he signed.
It's Kevin Owens. It's Sami Zayn.
Right. Or even just like, you know, some guy I've heard of that's never been there before. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, it's Jay Briscoe, you know what I mean? And he's only here for one match and he tried and he lost. But what AEW is they would bring in a guy like Nick Gage. I don't know how long he's going to be there or whatever, but they would be like, we're going to bring you in for a short program. You will have a real program here, but we're just going to kind of bring in indie talent when it makes sense, not sign everybody to a 2-year exclusive contract. That's a very cool thing. I don't know how I would classify AEW. I do think they feel a little bit more WCW-ish than ECW to me, just because ECW I think was just like, listen, this is who we are, and I don't think AEW has quite that pinpoint identity yet. But the point is this, what you want to talk about ECW, what made ECW special, one of the cool things was it was on, at least where I lived, at 3 a.m. on the Spanish channel on like Friday nights. So if
channel 27, 2 a.m.
That sounds right. Exactly. That sounds right. And so it's like, if you wanted to watch this thing, you had to seek it out. And it was almost like this, like, cool underground. You had to want it to consume it. There was like 1 or 2 hours a week. I think it was a 1-hour show.
1-hour prepaid programming.
Right. There you go. And, you know, when they were.
This is my wheelhouse. Now you're talking my language. Let's go.
I love me some ECW, Jimmy. So this is good stuff for me. And when they were big enough to finally get a pay-per-view, and I think it was 97 was the first one.
Barely legal.
Like, you could just 13. Feel good about where we all did it together, it kind of felt like. And AEW is never going to be that because they were immediately backed by a billionaire. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, you know what I mean? You guys aren't exactly grassroots, which is fine. I'm not going to fault you for being a company started by a successful person. Most of them are. But what with AEW... The frustrating thing I with AEW is, like what Eddie said, is they told me that they weren't going to just sign everybody. And you guys talk about like how WWE misuses so much guys. And oh, my God, if we had them, you have no idea. And honestly asking, like not trying to be a jerk, just honestly asking, would you say this is the absolute best version of Rusev? Like, oh, man, you're right. They didn't know what they had. We nailed it with this guy. Is that what you'd say about, was that how you would evaluate his time? He's been there about a year now. Is that how you evaluate his time there? Is like,
so oh. I would say that since they made the switch, which is only a couple months old, the answer was no, because he gets there and he was just fun loving Twitch guy. And yeah. It was like, this is garbage. They then somebody pulled him aside and was just like,
Tony Khan.
We're basically going to do the original, like, Russian monster, but we're not going to do the Russian part. Right. And since then, yes, I would say that this version of Rusev is what we wanted him to be once he stopped being Russian.
Okay.
Not like the weird, like, I love Lana so much, and we're going to have a love triangle with Dolph Ziggler. Because that version was awful.
Right.
And so
that's a good thing. But, like, So to cap off my original point, it's like, look, if AEW, I get why they're not going to be like, we're going to be 1 hour at 1 a.m. on Telemundo, and you better come looking for us because that's how we know you're a fan. I'm not expecting that at all. But do I think that they would benefit greatly from being a one-day, two-hour show? Yeah, absolutely. If they were like, we're on Wednesdays from 8 to 10, that's all, folks. We'll do like Dark if we have to, as like an internet thing, I suppose. But I just think, like, I look at the NFL and I compare the NFL to Major League Baseball. And there's all sorts of reasons why the NFL has surpassed baseball as America's sport. Like, you know, speed of play, excitement. I understand. However, one of the biggest things is that football is an event, right? You wouldn't go like tailgating with your buddies to Fenway because it's game 72 of 162. You know, with football, you get 16 games, 8 of them at home. The playoffs feel like a very, very big deal because it's a short tournament. And there's 6 months on, 6 months off. There's a long off season. And the less is more. Like, the worst thing the NFL's doing is talking about, like, 17 games, 18. They're already doing 17 games. Like, oh, maybe 18 games. Maybe we'll do Thursday and Friday and Saturday football. And it's just like, nope, you're doing it wrong. 16 games once a week, Monday night football, Sunday night football being a very, very big deal. That's the formula. It's a huge, huge part of their appeal, in my opinion. And if AEW could be like, we're going to do Dynamite, it's going to be 2 hours, it's going to be awesome, and then we'll see you next week, I really think the less is more factor would benefit them so greatly. But, you know, at the same time, they probably need to commit, you know, fulfill obligations, and there's contracts involved. I don't know. But I just think expanding before you've fully hit your stride, I just think that's a mistake.
So I want to tie this CM Punk point into a knot and ask you guys this question. Is CM Punk plopping into the scene, popping right into the scene, because we assume he's going to debut at the United Center Rampage. Like, it's sold out. Darby Allin did the tease. You know, I got to fight the best in the world. So we assume CM Punk is going to debut on that Rampage. If CM Punk takes the spot of Adam Page for the championship match at the pay-per-view on Labor Day, are the AEW fans, once we get out of Chicago, because that AEW pay-per-view is in Chicago, is there going to be a backlash because here comes CM Punk parachuting into the world championship scene, and if he wins the thing, and we just had this long, thorough, detailed Adam Page story, which, by the way, the TV announcers haven't done a really good job of. They have not done a good job of explaining the details of how deep this Adam Page story is. Is there going to be backlash towards CM Punk once he gets out of Chicago?
The problem is there should be, but there won't, right?
Yep, right.
Because the thing is that everything that you hear from, like, and I have no idea why this happened. Maybe it's because, like,
I think somebody told me, and I've only seen it from one person who's a friend of mine, who was like, Adam Page is going on maternity leave.
Sure. That makes sense. I mean,
is he pregnant? Mazel tov.
He is. For him. I'm speaking more from, like, AEW becomes a thing and fans romanticized, like, young fans that are obviously for the, you know, in the AEW market, that was like, this is going to be our Monday Night War. And they planted their flag in AEW before they even had a show. Right. And everything that WWE does is stupid and convoluted. And it's like, ugh, of course Goldberg's going to come for SummerSlam and fight Bobby Lashley. Ugh. And it's like, what I would say,
Goldberg.
First of all, here's the thing. For those of you who only listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes and never listen to the New Age Insiders, personal friend Bill Goldberg is always welcome on every single show.
Everything.
The two of us love him.
I'd give that guy a kidney if he needed one.
Yeah, he's the best. But, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, so he parachutes in from out of nowhere and is now in the WWE championship picture. Yeah, that's a little nutty, right? That's a little crazy. Like, I don't know why we're doing it. Look, we're here for it, but it is a little weird, right? And you have the AEW fan base coming in being like pointing at like, this is why WWE is dumb. And it's like, oh, so if CM Punk was to come in out of nowhere and just be in the AEW picture, that's the same thing.
I want to jump on that because so I do, and I'm going to be the guy that defends AEW in this situation. Good. I do think it is a little different than that because this to me only feels so dirty and greasy to me because it is CM Punk. And because in my, like the way I'm approaching this is the way that he vilified wrestling and now is jumping back and being like, I'm going to be the champion because no one else wants to hire me for anything. If this was like, because there's also rumors, I don't know how true they are or whatever, but I guess there's also heavy rumors that Daniel Bryan's going to AEW.
So, yeah, September, they have a big show at Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York, and that's the rumor that he's going to debut on that show.
So there you go. So if this was Daniel Bryan being plugged in there, I would understand why AEW fans, and I don't disagree with you that I think that there are a lot of AEW fans that have given the company a level of loyalty they haven't earned yet, but you like what you like, and if you're, you know, passionate about something, that's cool. So to AEW's credit, and to the fans' credit, I understand why it's like, hey, dude, this is a huge talent, a big name. Wrestling is all about selling shows and getting names. Of course, we're going to plug in Daniel Bryan here and have him be the champion, like, you know, just like WCW did with Hulk Hogan. Like, were they stupid to go all in on Hulk Hogan? Of course not. He's a huge free agent. And CM Punk, in a vacuum, on paper, if you're an AEW defender, saying like, dude, of course we're going to plug in CM Punk to a very big spotlight thing right away. People have wanted to see him for almost 8 years. It's like, you're right. That is correct. It just is the fact that it's this guy. It's not John Cena. It's not Edge. It's not Daniel Bryan. It's not Braun Strowman. It's not Bray Wyatt. It's this dude who I thought was too cool for wrestling. And it's so I have a different gripe with him. I want to kind of defend AEW defenders who would tell me that using a big time free agent's not a bad thing. I don't disagree.
I'm just going to be so mad if we've been doing a lot of really fun stuff. I don't think it's been maximized, but we've been doing some really fun stuff with Kenny Omega as the belt collector. And I really like it. And it's like, oh, are you going to be the company that is short-sighted and you're just going to have CM Punk come in out of nowhere and be in the championship match and win and just ruin all of your momentum with that guy just because it is CM Punk's return to wrestling? I hope not. I really hope not.
Probably.
So they have done such, I think AEW has done such a good job with this Adam Page story.
Yes.
But I think the problem is it's almost too deep and it's across too many promotions and across too many platforms.
Yeah.
And before Page was removed from the AEW title match, at least for now, because I hope that he gets put back in it because it ties all together that he goes into Chicago Labor Day weekend and he wins the championship. He beats Kenny Omega for that championship. Cause I think that crowd is ready. I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it.
Yeah. So, at the very least he needs to kick out of the One Winged Angel.
Ooh, are we doing that?
That's gotta be it, right? That's where we've got like
pinning the Undertaker. We can only do it once.
Yeah.
But with Adam Page, like I'm ready for it. I think it's the perfect moment. It's 2 years since Adam Page challenged for the first world championship. It's Kenny Omega. The story is there. It's built to this moment. And then you can do new and different matches with Adam Page going forward.
Right.
But I feel like if it's not CM Punk, it can't be Christian Cage, can it?
No, it can't be. It can't be.
Okay, so it's got to be CM Punk.
It has to be.
Unless this is a total red herring and they're going to put Paige back in there.
Well, see, and this would be the first time that you're going to talk about the hypocrisy point that Eddie brought up. Because if the plan, if we had this plan where we're going to make Kenny, you know, the cleaner again, the cocky guy and all these championships, going to different shows, winning their titles, because we want ultimately Adam Page to be our John Cena, and we want MJF to be our Randy Orton, our longtime, you know, franchise quarterback babyface and our longtime franchise quarterback heel. Those are the two guys. It's Adam Page and MJF. And we're going to crown Page. He'll be the guy to knock off Omega. It'll be this big culmination. We didn't blow, you know, we waited, we cooked this, you know, this soup for a long time. He wasn't the first champion. He wasn't the second champion. He wasn't even the third champion. You know, we earned this moment. And then CM Punk rolls in, and that all gets put on the back burner, and they make him the champion instead. Then you can really start talking about the hypocrisy of what that brings to that company, even though it's not WWE anymore. It's now basically the same. And what a shame that would be, because Adam Page is, what, like 28 years old or something like that? Kid's good. Kid's young. You've invested the time. It makes all the sense in the world to me for him to be the guy to beat Kenny. And if you sidetrack that for CM Punk, then shame on everybody. Shame on that guy. Shame on you for doing it. Like, what a shame that would be. You know what I mean? That's the other side of this thing, you know, beyond the, oh my God, he's back moment, which is going to be very cool and get a great reaction. And, you know, sure. it'll be a very cool thing.
Yeah, and if he answered an open challenge to Cody Rhodes or was the last guy to fight Chris Jericho, sure, that'd be a ton of fun. But inserting him into the AEW World Championship picture is a level of hypocrisy that is worse than if he went to WWE for me.
And I do want to add this little, I do want to add this little bit of kind of context is Jared Karrabus and Robbie Fox of Barstool Sports, they do a podcast. They've had CM Punk on a bunch of times. Within the last 6 to 10 months, Punk was on there, and he talked about if he were to go to an AEW, because at the time he wasn't signed there. He was still in his I'm doing horror movies phase.
Sure.
He said, I don't know that I could keep up with Kenny Omega. I would want to work with Darby Allin or Jungle Boy, somebody of that level of talent. And my hope is that he would keep to those words.
Sure.
And that his first program out of the gate is Darby Allin, because Darby Allin is the one who cited, oh, the best in the world. Obviously a tag to CM Punk. So that would be my hope, because I don't want him, like, if CM Punk drops into this title match and loses, okay. Like, I'm semi okay with that. But if he drops in there and just wins it right out of the gate, then I've got a huge issue with it.
Well, if he's
but I still think that the match should be Omega and Page. That's the match that should happen Labor Day weekend.
Correct. Well, if it's in it, he wins it. It's to me, it's like the equivalent of, like, let's just say, remember that the Royal Rumble that John Cena came back like miraculously early in, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, was it the 08 Rumble?
Madison Square Garden 08. I was in Arizona for it.
Right. So, like, well, he had to win, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because, like, if we bring him back and it's, oh my God, he's back and he's in the thing, he does have to win it. And so, like, if Punk is in the match, I mean, of course he wins the match. It's now just a matter of whether or not he gets it. Because, like, if you bring back CM Punk from the dead and, you know, plump him up, and this is all just this the biggest middle finger you can give to the company, you know, the other guys, you know, of course he wins. You know what I mean? Like, that's insanity. You know what I mean? That's like, that makes Triple H beating Booker T look like a good idea. You know what I mean? Like,
so, and it makes Kevin Nash, Triple H coming out of retirement to beat CM Punk on a random pay-per-view,
makes,
you know,
sense.
And makes comparison. Sense, which so, he never yeah. did.
If he's in it, he wins it. It's really just a matter of, like, is he going to work a few side programs while we do the Page payoff that we should be doing, because then if, like, Adam Page's first challenger is CM Punk, then that's okay to me too.
Yeah, it's usually that's very legitimizing, if,
right?
You know, Page,
and it's also that you've closed this story with Adam Page and Kenny Omega, this chapter of this story, and you can go back to it later if you want right. to. But you've gotten your mission accomplished by, here's our world champion, 30-year-old Adam Page.
So AEW,
and he's our world champion.
Yeah, right. That's your guy.
I had this conversation with somebody when we were talking about when AEW stupidly copied the beer truck, and I asked the question, what is the premier AEW storyline? And they don't have one yet, right? Like they don't have anything that's their like tentpole feud. They don't have a Rock Austin, the Mega Powers explode, right? Like they don't have
Sting is up in the rafters.
Yeah, they don't have Sting is up in the rafters, right? They don't have the Ultimate Challenge, right? Like they don't have those type of moments yet. And so it's like, if you're going to forego that your first all-time moment, you know, like you've conjured, right? You've created this for a pop because of a guy, that's very short-sighted.
So I would say that their AEW signature moments are Jericho wins the first world title, them doing the stadium stampede. It should have been the Moxley Omega death match. But that was a fail.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're not right? great. They're not great at production, right? Like, I really enjoy
this,
their
this
matches.
Is the thing, right, Eddie? I don't know if you watched the last Stadium Stampede.
Yes.
You did watch it. Did you think that they had issues on production then, too?
Yes.
I mean, okay, great. I love that you said yes, because here's why. They brought in a big time, and I don't remember the person's name, but they paid a lot of money to bring in a professional film person to help film a lot of this stuff over the course of 4 days.
Yeah, it's just, it's tough because they just haven't found the right tone of voice for them. And they keep bungling it at the like most inopportune moments, right? Because Jericho getting tossed off the cage, right, is a camera cut away from being awesome, right? If you have that, you don't see Jericho hit the mat and he just falls out of frame. Awesome. Great. Perfect. Because how many times have we seen Jeff Hardy jump into a crash pad from off of a stage? We don't see him hit the crash pad, but we have a couple of minutes later where the cameras run over to him and we've had enough time to like fix it to make it look good. You know, they're missing those type of moments. The death match. Oh my God, guys, the death match was just terrible. And it's like, if anything, put a sparkler in front of the camera. And so even if it looks like that for the live audience, you at least make it look bigger on television. And it's just, they just lack that stuff. And to be fair to them, they're only 2 or 3 years old as a company, right? So I would like to think that they're getting very ambitious in terms of like what they want to accomplish, and they just haven't figured out how to do it yet. But don't tell me that WWE sucks and then put sparklers on the four posts of the ring and call it a death match.
I had two friends who were at the death match who saw Omega go into the barbed wire, saw no cuts or anything like that, and saw the explosion go off underneath, and he grabbed his friend and went, we're good here. We can go home now. There's nothing to see here. They're not going to do anything spectacular.
Well, it's like to me,
left in the middle of the death match.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair to the company, because I am trying to like that as my part.
And I was trying to be fair. I said after the show that like I'll give them a little bit of liberty because they're trying to be safe. We're still in a pandemic.
Sure.
Like I'll work with them a little bit that they tried.
Well, the
then the ring doesn't even go
learning.
Up in flames, and I'm like, I can't do that anymore.
I can't blame the pandemic on the ending. That's the thing. It's like, so with to be fair to AEW,
well, you can't really bleed. Like, you shouldn't be bleeding.
Wait, well, then my whole thing is just like, okay, so guess what? The whole show is scripted. So if we're in the middle of a pandemic, and you know we're in the middle of a pandemic, maybe don't book a death match at all if we're not going to let the guys bleed and go crazy. Like, Nobody makes you do these things. Like that's the one of the frustrating things about wrestling is it's like WWE. So many times when we would talk on the New Age Insiders on Wednesdays, we talk about like how they book themselves into these impossible corners, and like, you know, there's two guys that both can't afford to lose, or like, you know, you had this thing where like, you know, we joke about it, but it's like you booked this match where like Dean Ambrose was the champion and Dolph Ziggler, the whole story was Ziggler, if you lose this match, you're the biggest loser ever. This is your biggest moment. This is it. This is it. And then he lost. And it's like, well, we didn't want to drop the title and we liked the story, but now what do we do? And this is, you know, nobody makes you do these things is my point. Anyway, with AEW, again, to be fair to them, they are young. They are ambitious. They will get better, I think. And, you know, this is an early on in the process thing. Like, they're not, they'll be better next year. They'll be better in 5 years. They'll be better.
Well, because look at what ended up happening with the death match with Nick Gage, right? That was a better death match than the other, than the one we're talking about.
They'll be better next year, 5 years, 10 years. I believe that. But here's the thing. If you're going to end the match with it exploding, if you're going to do it, you have to be sure it's going to work. Like WWE, for all of their faults, like remember they had that gimmick once like 10 years ago or so where like part of the staging, quote unquote, fell on Vince McMahon and that led to him being off TV for a while. Well, you have to be sure that that thing's going to fall, and you have to be sure where it's going to fall, and you have to be sure, because if we're not sure, then we shouldn't do it. Because, like, here's something WWE wasn't sure of. Remember Owens versus Roman Reigns?
And last man standing match. They couldn't break the handcuff.
Right. And so it's like, guys, if we're going to bust out handcuffs, we have to be sure. Heyman has to know where the key is. They have to be tricked. Reigns has to know the trick. Owens has to know the trick. Like, if we're going to do it, we have to be sure, because if we're not, it'll bring the whole thing to a screeching halt, which it did. So WWE's not perfect, and they've been around for 100 years. So AEW, though, all I'm telling you is, if you're going to blow up the ring, if you're going to do it, no one's making you, but if you're going to, you have to be sure. I don't know what you're going for here, guys, but it wasn't that. And not doing it at all would have been better than what you delivered. So you gotta be sure. Oh my gosh.
We'll just stop counting. That's all. We'll get to seven and count and we'll just stop. It's okay.
The ref will just start talking to Owens for no reason.
Jason, just stop counting. Just stop counting, Jason.
The character of Kevin Owens would have just picked up something made of metal and hit Roman Reigns in the head with it until he won. And instead he's just like sitting there.
Yeah. Kevin is so good, and I'm a huge Kevin Owens fan. And at some point later on, he had a tweet about, like, I had Roman beat, and they just stopped counting. I mean, the job is in, you know, they can't beat him.
Yeah, right? It's really, because that's another one of those things where it's like, that guy is so good, and they just won't get behind him. And they keep sticking him on the shows where the other guy, like the guy that's at the top, just is involved in something that's longer and bigger, you know, because like the Roman Reigns stuff, it's like, look, I'm not even going to tell you that I like Roman Reigns more than Kevin Owens, because I don't. If you listen to the New Age Insiders, you would know that Kevin Steen is one of my all time favorite wrestlers. Right. And I would have loved to have watched him too. I would have loved to have watched him win that and a shock, right? But Roman Reigns is involved in something way bigger than Kevin Owens right now. And it's really unfortunate because, Roman Reigns needs to keep that title, right? And it's just like, God, I really wish. Because
that's the end of the head of the table. That's the end of the tribal chief once he loses that thing.
Right. And we are nowhere close to finished with that story. I also have... out of left field prediction on that. I know you wanted to touch on that a little bit.
I want to finish with the AEW. Usually I'd just be like, let's do it now. But I do have a follow up on AEW, and then I want to get to the Roman Reigns thing.
Sure, hit me.
With the depth of characters and you guys' experience with character development, like, I want to dig into that a little bit. So we'll get back to the Roman Reigns thing. Don't worry.
Right.
Cody. Cody Rhodes retiring? Is this the Mark Henry storyline from WWE a few years ago?
So I'm kind of curious
to see where it is, because I appreciate the retirement storyline, but it kind of seemingly came out of nowhere.
It does. It does kind of feel like it came out of nowhere. I do feel like Cody is kind of taking a step back. I think him more than the other executive vice presidents in AEW feels like he takes his administrative role a little bit more seriously.
He does. I think he leads the production meetings.
So I think that him kind of taking, you know, it's ironic, but him taking that Triple H kind of mentality where it's like, yeah, I'm basically going to take myself off of TV. I'm going to go do my other show on TBS where I see people do stupid human tricks, and I'm going to like be on TV doing that. And then like he just had a child. So, you know, he's going to spend time with the kid. So him just kind of taking himself off of television for a few years outside of like big matches. You know, he's going to be at All Out. He's going to be at Full Gear, right? Like those type of events that are huge for them. Double or Nothing is another one. You know, like, I think that that's kind of his role kind of going forward. Once things kind of calm down, I guess, in his personal life, 5 years from now, you might see him a little bit more active. But I do think that he takes his role as an executive vice president a little bit more seriously, and he's going to be focusing on that going forward.
Yeah, short answer, no, absolutely not. Has he worked his last match? Not even close. I'm not even convinced Ric Flair's worked his last match at this point. So these guys just, I mean.
Hogan's still waiting to get cleared.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's like, it's not even close. So I completely agree with Eddie. What this to me speaks of is like, it's a couple things. It's he's part of that other show, that talent show thing. He does wear an executive hat. He did just have a kid and probably thinks that any time spent, you know, dedicating myself to working a program with whoever is probably better spent doing father stuff, which makes a lot of sense to me. And the other thing, too, is this is the best thing he can be doing, is taking these huge breaks, because you got to think about it like this. In a world where kayfabe is all now suspension of disbelief, it's the same thing of going to the movies, because we all kind of know the deal. Cody Rhodes is a performer on this roster and as a member of this show. Well, if he keeps going on losing streaks, then he stops really having value and almost loses credibility as an administrator because he's just some loser. So we can't do that. And if he just keeps winning and winning big matches, then eventually, I know we had that thing where he can never be the AEW champion, but logically, he should at least be in contention for something. And, you know, but we really don't want Cody Rhodes to be here to be the boss champion. You know, this isn't Jeff Jarrett, you know, a personal ego project where the next company Jeff Jarrett starts, he'll be the champion for the first year. That's really not what Cody's done here at all, to his credit. So kind of, well, what do we do with the guy? You know what I mean? So taking these significant breaks and almost becoming a attraction match guy for them moving forward just makes all the sense in the world to me for all sorts of reasons. Even when his kid is grown and all that stuff, and he finds a way to balance whatever, it's still, you know, what do we do with Cody Rhodes if he's never going to be the AEW champion? I don't know. Probably shouldn't be using him all the time then,
so
kind of stuff.
I always thought that they had an out to that, and that was, like, say Kenny Omega beats Adam Page, right? Say Kenny Omega beats whoever in St. Louis in November, right? And then now we're in February, and Kenny Omega's like, I got nobody else, and I'm just going to leave the company. And here comes Cody, a VP, and is like, you know what? I know we had this stipulation, but you haven't beaten me. And then they can tie in the old stories. And I think Kenny Omega did beat Cody on a New Japan show, so I probably have that wrong. But in the world of AEW, you haven't beaten me for the world title, and then Cody comes in and saves the day and keeps the belt in AEW. Something sure. like that.
Right.
Like, I always thought that there was that out behind in just in the background.
Right. And at the very least,
just overrule it.
It's two things too. It's one of the easiest one is I'm the boss and this I'm doing this, you know what I mean? Which they could do at any time. And the second one is anything in wrestling that you can lose, you can win back, whether it's,
to fight MJF again to be able to do it.
Right. Whether it's like in the world of wrestling, anything from the Money in the Bank briefcase to your wife, if you lose her, you can just win them back in a match. So Cody can just have a match where if he wins, he can be AEW champion one day. And, you know, it's super easy if we ever win.
If Shawn Michaels can wrestle again because The Undertaker said so, then all bets are off.
Yeah. Right.
I know initially I was concerned that Cody was going to be the boss who was going to take the world championship and just eat everybody up. But what I found was Cody, the last year, really put a lot of effort into shining spotlights on other people. The MJF story, Brody Lee. Cody calls the Brody Lee match the greatest squash match of all time, which I would say probably Warrior Honky Tonk Man from SummerSlam 88.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm 40, so I'm an old bastard, so I remember that one. But he tried to make me care about a feud with QT Marshall. And granted, I didn't. I appreciate the effort.
Sure.
But what he did for Aleister Black was impressive because Aleister Black just came in and blew doors on him. And to the point where here's Cody putting his boots in the ring. And he might, you know, that's the tease, is that he might be retired. So, like, that's an instant impact right there. And the case is AEW in 4 weeks made Aleister Black feel more important than WWE did in how many years?
Right. And well, and the thing with Cody Rhodes too, Jimmy, not to take up too much more time on it, but like the thing with Cody is, like, I think Cody Rhodes, like, you can say whatever you want about the Ring of Honor Championship. Like, you know, we had Cody on our show. I remember you texting me after we had him on our show to talk about the fact that when Cody won the Ring of Honor title, Triple H himself texted him and said, like, hey, good job, man. You know what I mean? You won a world title. And with all due respect to Ring of Honor, and it does say world champion on the belt, is it, you know what I mean? Like, I think
Jay Lethal might feel like the last Ring of Honor world champion.
Right. And if Cody had won the New Japan,
Matt Taven.
If Cody had won the New Japan
Careful.
Heavyweight championship, you know what I mean? Then I think it's like, okay, he did it. He's a real world champion, like the New Japan IWGP heavyweight championship. No one's going to take, you know, asterisk that thing. He did it. But to go and start your own company and then be the champion, and then that's like, that's how I'll rub this in Hunter's face. I started a company. I paid for a belt. I won the belt on the show I produce. Haha, I made it. That even Cody Rhodes would be like, that's pretty pathetic. You know what I mean? It's like, that's what Jeff Jarrett does. Jeff Jarrett just starts companies or revives the NWA somehow and wins their championship. And he's like, look, I'm a draw. And it's like, okay, Jeff. And so that's what Cody Rhodes, to his credit, is not doing that with AEW. And although I gave him a lot of guff for breaking Triple H's chair during an entrance once, at the very least, he's not Kenny Omega right now collecting belts and being like, look, I did it. You know what I mean? It's like that. I give him a lot of credit for not using that company that way.
Well, I mean, Cody did win the NWA title, and then he's like, yeah, I kind of don't want this. I kind of had my moment. I'm good. How quickly can I get this back to Nick Aldis?
Oh, yeah, trust me. It's like being like the NWA champion is, I'm sorry, meaningless in 2000 and anything. And so it's like.
So a few things. One is, I mean, Ring of Honor did main event Madison Square Garden. I know it was under the premise that other people would be there, but, you know, that's kind of a big deal. And, you know, I'm friendly with Taven, so I'm a little biased there. The other thing with the NWA thing is it is kind of cool that there's a father and son duo who are the NWA champions. I think that's cool.
It is very cool. And, like, yeah, Taven.
He couldn't get rid of that belt fast enough, which is funny.
You know, Taven,
and you guys were at that AEW show, right? Did you go to
we
that?
Were at all in. We were at All In. Yeah.
The thing with Taven and specifically Ring of Honor in that Madison Square Garden show is that that poor guy is like, he had an insurmountable task, right? Because he had been carrying that company and still to an extent is carrying that company, you know, on his back. And they basically lied to be like, yeah, all of the elite guys are going to be here. And it's like, that's real shitty for him, you know, like that's not cool because, you know, Taven did and has put on very good matches and has been a, you know, a tentpole for Ring of Honor for years at this point. And for them to just kind of stab him in the back a little bit isn't that great. But yeah, I don't know where Nick Aldis defends the NWA championship. He calls himself the real world's champion. And it's just like, was Cody Rhodes the last time you like wrestled for that belt?
Was NWA Power
Mike Bennett's return match was against Nick Aldis.
Oh, okay.
And that's honestly the last NWA championship match that I remember watching. And the only reason is because Mike Bennett and I like Mike Bennett. He's friend and
sure.
You know.
Yeah.
Didn't NWA Power get canceled their show?
Yeah, it's on Twitch or something.
I think I don't know if it got, I know one of their writers had an issue and it got put on the side for a little bit. And then it came back and it was back to like small time studio wrestling. I know Mickey James is doing stuff for their women's division. I mean, I think you see the NWA represented more on AEW than you do anywhere else.
Sure. Yeah. It looks like the 70s.
Neat. Hey, Billy Corgan fan of the 70s.
Sure. Yeah.
But you've got a small territory because you wanted to buy Ring of, was it Ring of Honor? Was
yeah, you wanted to buy Ring of Honor. Oh, it might have been Impact. I think it was Impact.
At one point, he was like,
he was investing money in
Impact. I just don't know what happened. It's sounded like a whole, it seemed like it was during that period where they couldn't get anything right, like hoodwinking AJ Styles with a contract offer and like bringing that guy in and then him being like, whoa, this thing's a disaster. Like there was that like,
and 2000 Aries.
Yeah. That like 2015, 16 period where they couldn't do a thing right.
Yeah. I
vaguely remember it because Billy Corgan's close friends with Mike and Maria Bennett. And I think Mike Bennett was going to be the Impact World Champion. And
that'll put some butts in seats.
Hey, watch it here. I know. I wish they weren't so bitter about their WWE time on Twitter, but you know, that's their thing.
Sure.
But I remember him. I know it is. And Mickey James has creeped into that stable too. But I remember Billy Corgan paying for like three sets of tapings over the course of like 2 months or something like that. Yeah, I think Eddie Edwards became the world champion under that time frame.
Yes, he did.
His former tag team partner, Richie Richards.
Richie Rich and Eddie Edwards. The American Wolves.
Richie Richards and Eddie Edwards.
I like Eddie. Eddie's a friend too.
Eddie Edwards is a good dude. Eddie Edwards multiple times. He's a very good dude.
Yeah. And then his wife worked in Chaotic for a while.
Mrs. Yep. AIP in Impact.
Yeah.
All right. Closing question here for you guys. I had something about the Four Horsewomen and ranking it, but
this next week.
Yeah.
That's the teaser for the next week. The return of the New Age Insiders, right?
Yeah. You know, who's to say? Who's to say? You have all the power, Jimmy. You keep, asking us to come. We'll keep doing it.
I only have so much power. Like I only have so much power and it's no secret. I asked for Carabas to be my podcast partner. Barstool said no. They told me I was working with Riley. And here we are 200 episodes in.
We'll put in our demo tape and we'll see how we get on the
length of power. Hey, I've gotten the pleasure of having you on multiple shows. Eddie was nice enough to call in when we had our WrestleMania post-game show, which was really exciting for me because I could look at the phone line and what's that?
It's a real trip, huh?
Well, so I haven't done live radio like that. You know, there's a difference between sitting behind an audio mixer and being in the studio where you're like, oh my God, I actually have to like continuously talk and, you know, punch up phone callers and, you know, manage the clock. It's a totally different thing. I hadn't done that since college. And it's different with the podcast. Like the podcast, you know, we're almost 90 minutes into this thing. And we can just go and transition and all that stuff as opposed to, let's see, I have two more minutes of this segment. If I take a call, do I go over the break? Do I want to go over the break? Is this call, you know, and there's that whole thought process and that's way too inside baseball. So, but I appreciate you guys joining this and doing this. And my final question to you guys, who beats Roman Reigns? And more specifically, who do you want to beat Roman Reigns? Who do you think will beat Roman Reigns?
So I if I'm a writer for WWE, which based on my track record, they definitely don't listen to me. but everybody on Twitter will agree. The story that you're telling me is it's Jey Uso, and it should be Jey Uso. The whole head of the table started with Roman beating him into submission to becoming the right-hand man to the head of the table. So he had the first experience. We had the test of like, could Jay be the guy? And everybody lost their mind with those singles matches with him and Roman Reigns. And they were fantastic. And now he's, you know, a lapdog. And so wrestling story tells me that Roman is going to beat everybody. He's going to beat Cena. And then The Rock comes in and he wrestles him at WrestleMania and he beats The Rock. And then Jay comes in at SummerSlam a year from now and beats the head of the table for the family and, like, you know, reclaims the glory. That's how I would do it. But like I said, WWE does not listen to me.
So I will respectfully disagree and take an easy cop-out answer all at the same time. It's a Molotov special. I can't give that win to Jey Uso because there's just no way Jey Uso can take that weight and carry years of pro. Like, even though WWE doesn't care about anything and stories and all that stuff, this they do care about, and I just don't think there's any way that guy can carry that win, not even for a day. I don't think he could handle the pressure of carrying that win on to the next Raw. And so my cop-out answer, though, is I don't know, and I don't think it should be anytime soon, and that's why I don't know. Because to Eddie's point, if it was anybody else, if it was, you know, if Seth Rollins was Samoan and that's who started this, if it was anybody but Jey Uso, I'd believe that you're 1,000% correct. I also believe was one of those guys, and this is going to pivot to my next point. I was one of those guys that was foolish enough to think that at one point Kane was a serious contender to end the streak, because this guy, his whole story arc was, I came to this company to find my brother and I'm came here to kill him. And through our ups and downs and friendships and tag team titles and Inferno matches, like, I still came here to do something. And as far as like Kane, the character, he actually never got what he came to do. Right. And it would have been a mistake to give it to Kane. Even though Kane is way, way higher in the rankings than Jey Uso is. And ultimately Brock Lesnar, and this is where I'll get a ton of heat, bring it on, 'cause I'm right. Brock Lesnar was the perfect guy to beat the streak. You didn't see it coming. That moment is like all time of making 60,000 people go silent. Brock Lesnar then took that win, won multiple championships, headlined multiple WrestleManias, ragdolled John Cena. Just
after Hunter beat him twice.
Yeah, but not.
It was before that,
right? But not after the streak when they took that guy took that win. Those 21 years worth of momentum, that win, that guy did more with it than anybody could have. Not Bray Wyatt, not Kane, not Triple H, because he doesn't need that win. Like, Brock Lesnar went from like star to all-timer over the next few years because of that win. And I couldn't have predicted that Brock Lesnar would have been the right guy. I don't know when, like going into that match, I would have told you it shouldn't be Brock Lesnar. And now in retrospect, it's like, yep, you were right. What a great job you did. But Jey Uso can never beat Roman Reigns and then elevate to a main event level Brock Lesnar guy, in my opinion. And you don't have to be Brock Lesnar because he's special 1% heir to me. But like, Jey Uso is never going to be a singles main event star for this company. I can't give him that win. But at the same time, I don't have a better answer for you as far as like, name me a guy. I don't know. Bobby Lashley. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Somebody on the roster, if it makes sense at the time. But I hope it's not until it's somebody that makes sense. It sounds like through interviews with Vince McMahon, The Undertaker, Heyman, that the logic behind it was, look, if Brock doesn't beat you tonight, who's going to, and when, and for what? And it's him. And so, like, I don't know when that moment will dawn. I don't know if AJ Styles will feel like the right guy. I don't know if it's some guy that's in NXT right now. I don't know if it's some guy that's not on the roster right now. I don't know if it's Brock Lesnar himself, but I don't know. I just don't want to see it anytime soon, because whenever you when you build these things, it matters what happens next. It does. Like, you built up Bill Goldberg for 173 matches, even if he only did half of them, doesn't matter. In the books it was 173. You gave that win to Kevin Nash just so he could get finger poked, and you blew it, right? If you build up this win and give it to somebody that's not ready to carry a huge weight, you'll blow it. And I hope they don't, because with The Undertaker, they didn't blow it. They didn't. So like I said, I don't have a great answer for you, because I couldn't have ever predicted Lesnar, and I can't predict this, I don't think. But he should beat The Rock. He should beat John Cena. And whoever beats him, I just hope it's right. But I don't know who that is right now. That's my answer.
That's the only other option.
Oh, Biggie's a great answer.
Biggie's the only other option.
No, Biggie's a great answer. That's a great answer to that.
Mr. Money in the Bank.
I hope it's him over almost anybody else now that you say that. That's a great answer.
So Biggie is my hope. And my hope happens after WrestleMania, because I think the Roman Reigns agenda of matches goes John Cena, Finn Balor. So August is John Cena. September is Finn Balor. Maybe you get two matches out of Finn Balor, although I don't know.
The good thing is that you're going to have that champion versus champion for if they still.
So that's Brock Lesnar, I think.
Okay.
I think, because they got to do
Lesnar beats Lashley.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Maybe.
Maybe there was something where Brock wasn't ready for SummerSlam. Maybe he just didn't want to do it. I'm happy to see Goldberg in the spot, but
always happy to see Goldberg.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to see Goldberg.
We were
his
personal guest at his Hall of Fame induction. It was, which is awesome.
If you've ever wanted
that's true.
If I was worried, right? Like, I had a great time, except for Hillbilly Jim's speech.
He's still talking.
He's still talking in the Superdome. But if you ever wanted to be like scared that the person next to you is actually going to spontaneously combust, then I would say that night.
I was happy that night. We were having a good time.
No, that's awesome. So, October, you have to kind of figure out October, but November is either Lashley or Lesnar. I think the Rumble is Goldberg. I think. Again?
No, the first time.
Because you have to do Roman and Goldberg at some point, right? Because after SummerSlam, he's got two matches left. That's so unless you're having Roman Reigns retire Goldberg, which would actually be kind of badass.
Yeah, dude.
Like you have to do the Roman Goldberg match. And then you're at WrestleMania and that's The Rock. So once we get beyond The Rock, Big E still has, let's see, April, May, June, July, 3.5-ish months to cash in. So are we at the point where we're ready to kind of pivot off of that? Probably not. But maybe it's wrestling. They can do an extension and maybe it ends up being SummerSlam. That's who I would like to see do it as Big E.
Well,
I think if Big E does cash in, it's against a Raw superstar, but that's another thing. I think it's going to be Drew McIntyre.
Well, and I know that wrestling fans have no patience, but there's also something to be said about the idea that, like, what if they telegraph it, right? Like, you're 100% right. Like, he retires Bill Goldberg, he beats John Cena. If there's anybody else along the way, Finn Balor, etc., that this guy's just running through right now, right? And it's super telegraphed. Like, let's even say that Big E does the, you know, the Rob Van Dam kind of thing and says, I'm cashing in for the XYZ show coming up, whatever. I'll see you there. And everybody's like, here it is. He's going to win. It's Big E's moment. We did it. And then Reigns beats him. Right. And so now up is down, black is white. Nobody knows what's going on. And then Big E is still the guy, but it's another obstacle for him to overcome that he didn't just beat this dude that Reigns is everything he said he was. But eventually, when when we're ready, he can still be that guy. You don't have to have a briefcase for him to be that guy. Or again, if somebody emerges that makes the most sense at the time that you have a great deal of confidence in, you could always do that as well. But, you know, there's options here, because the thing with the story is, I agree with both of you, we don't feel near the end yet. And I don't know when the end will come, but I don't feel like we're there yet.
No, and with Big E, like, he could have a failed cash-in, and then fast forward, he wins the Rumble.
Right.
And then it's Los Angeles at WrestleMania, and it's put-up or shut-up time, and now Roman Reigns is going on 700, 800 days as Universal Champion, whatever the number is going to be.
Right.
And it's like Los Angeles, Big E, it's got to happen here. And maybe the timing is right, because you can play off of the failed success, and then you have another member of New Day have their moment at WrestleMania, which I think is very cool.
Right, which also helps to mean talk about a group that's already an all-time group. You know, now if two of them have gone on to win, you know, world championships, that's now you're getting into things that are almost unprecedented. You know what I mean? Like, out of the NWO, two of those guys won world championships, not all three. So, I mean, like...
Yeah, it's Shield Air.
Yeah, right. Yep. It's true. I would agree with that.
You know,
and the Shield had the breakup. New Day has not had the breakup, and Kofi, at least he told me a few weeks ago, New Day hasn't had the conversation about being a break about breaking.
I hope they never break up.
Well, the opposite.
I agree with that.
He told us the opposite, that the three of them are like basically like, we don't want to. We do not want to split this thing up. We never want to be enemies. Like, you know, even if we're
he told me basically the same thing. Yeah.
Like, even if we're not a group forever, like, I don't want to ever, you know, have a problem with these guys on screen.
It would look and feel weird after all the time and investment. You know, I didn't want to see the Road Warriors fight. I didn't want to see the Steiners fight. It's stuff like that. Like, I wasn't interested in it. But let me ask you, and I bring up Drew McIntyre for this reason. Drew McIntyre in one night, when he won the Rumble and he eliminated Brock Lesnar, he was pivoting towards a good guy, and then he was, right? He wins the title during the pandemic. He holds the title throughout the pandemic. Now he's drifting off. I assume that come October, he's going to be a member of the SmackDown roster. You build him. You keep him away from Roman Reigns on SmackDown. You get past WrestleMania, and people are like, why hasn't Drew McIntyre had a shot? Maybe he gets the briefcase at next year's Money in the Bank. And McIntyre, to me, because Roman Reigns speaks so highly of Drew McIntyre, and we might get to a point during this run where Roman goes, McIntyre's the guy. Let's do it.
Maybe. You know, I think that McIntyre gets a lot of flack. I do think that Daniel Bryan was 100% right when he said that wrestling fans are fickle.
Yep.
You know, because he was a soldier throughout that pandemic. You know, you had wanted him to live up to the chosen one moniker for forever. Fans were clamoring, and then it finally happens, and all of a sudden you hate him, right? And it's like, man, like, it's tough because this guy hasn't changed much, you know, and it's just unfortunate that he never got to really carry that title with a crowd.
I just don't understand why wrestlers are held to such like different standards than almost anybody else, where it's just like, if let's just say, you know, you're a big basketball fan, right? And it's like, you know, LeBron's basically just been like driving to the hole for 18 years, every once in a while taking a step back jumper and stuff. But I mean, he just keeps driving to the hole and averaging 30 points. Boring. It's like, how come he doesn't do more like windmill dunks and shoot more threes? It's like, oh, because he's very, very, very good at the things he does, and he's not going to just start, you know, like, what are you talking about? And so it's like, if you're a professional wrestler, it's like, you know, what if I told you that Hulk Hogan, like, knew the moves he knew, did the moves he could, got over and left? And that's what wrestling really is, you guys. And so it's just like, yeah, he's got the kilt and he's big and he does the kick, and it's just like, yeah, you're right, man, that's what he does.
Like, well, also, you liked it 2 months ago.
Right, and you're totally right that you want to talk about a guy that, like, you know, won his championships in front of nobody and like, just, you know, it still carried on and feels like a very good WWE ambassador, employee kind of thing. But yeah, there's the fickleness of it. And, you know, I like Drew McIntyre. And if Drew McIntyre's the guy that makes sense at the time, that's just fine. All I would tell you is that most, not all, but most big, prolonged, built up victories in that particular company tend to go to veterans they have tremendous trust in. It wasn't, you know, I'm trying to think of a young talent, like Wade Barrett didn't retire Ric Flair. Shawn Michaels did, you know, Bray Wyatt didn't beat the streak. Brock Lesnar did. And
oh, then we have our answer. It's Triple H. He's coming out of retirement, just out on a whim, because he's going to beat Roman to avenge the WrestleMania 32 loss of the championship.
Everybody so mad, right. And I would love it.
All I'm telling you is that I don't want this to happen, but there is probably a statistical higher likelihood that somebody like Edge beats Roman Reigns than the guy that you think makes the most sense. That's just like how this place rolls.
So I actually don't think that they have the answer to this question yet, but work with me on this hypothetical, right? John Moxley signed a 2-year contract with AEW.
Getting to the end of this, right?
Oh, he doesn't want to go back there. Yeah. I think he genuinely did not like it there.
I agree with that, but you know, if they put the decimal point in the right place, it's John Moxley, not Dean Ambrose. Bruce Pritchard might be more of an advocate for him.
He would need to have that CM Punk level, like type of deal when he had at the end. Because like CM Punk, they talked about it in the Best in the World documentary, is how when he, you know, right before he left, he was the guy that was like dictating his storylines for the most part, right? Or like, hey, you're going to wrestle so-and-so, but he was kind of saying how it went, right? And so you would have to give him like that level of control or something where it's just like, look, I'm just coming in, you know, part time.
In my experience, Vince McMahon has rewarded exactly one guy after leaving, and it was Brock Lesnar, who still had to take his eat crap match and lose to John Cena when he first came back in that Extreme Rules 2012. Most people that leave do not get heroes welcomes. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you have to be very special, like Hogan, Lesnar.
Dwayne.
Yeah, and because The Rock didn't leave on bad terms. The Rock kind of just left on like, you know, and I'll always poke in and I'll always be The Rock. Like Brock Lesnar was like, I'm going to go play for the Vikings. It's like, excuse me? You know what I mean?
True.
And so it's like people that leave, like Jericho. I think that Vince McMahon would do business with Jericho again if there's business to be made and all that stuff. But like, I don't think Chris Jericho would get welcomed back with open arms after all this. I don't believe that. So if, you know, if Moxley wanted to, there's business to be had. Do I see him getting fed to Roman Reigns over beating Roman Reigns? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I would too. You know, because they even let Renee go, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. Renee's year, she couldn't work for a year because she had a year left on a contract or something like that. I think that's coming up soon.
Yeah, and she tweeted recently where she's like, I always love wrestling and my non-compete's almost up. And so it's like she's heavy hinting that she'll just go join him there. And I'd be surprised, but nothing's impossible.
I don't know how that's legal to have a year non-compete. But
no. Oh, I don't understand how you can be an independent contractor, but then not work any other places.
Right, yeah. And not have health insurance in a job that like really requires it.
Yeah, maybe it's Adam Cole who beats Roman because they're going to give him $1 million to work SmackDown and Raw, and Vince is going to be like,
I don't understand.
He's too small.
I just don't understand what's happening with that. Where it's like you hear all the reports of like Vince is like, I'm done with short guys, and like, but then the other side of the mouth is saying like, yeah, he's going to back up the Brinks truck for Adam Cole, and it's just like those two things don't make sense.
Yeah, it's also
because
like,
it's coming from Hunter.
I'm done coming with from short Hunter. Guys, so let me cut Braun Strowman.
Yeah, right.
I know a few years ago that Hunter told Adam Cole he was going to make him a millionaire with his next contract.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Adam Cole absolutely should be. That guy is everything that he is billed as. He is one of the best pro wrestlers on the planet and he should be treated as such. He's treated like that in NXT. But I do not trust the John Laurinaitises of the world to have that same sort of faith in him.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not even going to throw that in Vince, right? Because if Hunter, I think, has enough clout to be like, yo, this is the guy, you know, because they put the Universal title on Finn Balor. Finn Balor was that guy before he got hurt, right?
And then they put it on Kevin Owens. Yeah, I mean, Hunter literally handed Kevin Owens the Universal Championship.
Right. So I do feel like he would listen to him. The problem is that it feels like Laurinaitis is back in his, you know, in Vince's ear. And that's the guy I don't trust. That's the guy who's like, I'm Johnny Ace.
Like, I gotta, it's gotta be a big hulking monster. Like, let's put it on it's Styles' tag team partner. That's the real talent in that tag team. It's like,
yeah, we need guys like Hogan and Warrior. They never bit us in the ass.
Well, I mean, I think the people with the most power in WWF are Vince, Bruce Pritchard,
right?
Michael Hayes, and
Dunn.
Kevin Dunn.
Yeah.
And Laurinaitis and Triple H, I think that's your six.
Right.
Like, if your creative meeting starts with like 100 people in the room, it gets down to those six.
But right. how long before Vince McMahon looks at Triple H and goes, well, you like everybody. You know what I mean? Like, you told me that I'm going to love everybody.
So, well, and I think that's where the NXT thing, that's where Bruce and Vince went down to NXT and they were like, okay, we're going to do this quarterly. We are going to clean your house for you since you won't do it.
Maybe.
And yeah. I think that's what we're finding out is with the NXT is that quarterly we're going to filter through this roster.
It's unfortunate because I've said it for years, but wrestling's too old. It's got the same problems that baseball has where it refuses to evolve in some aspects. And you're seeing it with AEW, right? AEW is basically looking at like, all right, fans, what do you want, right? Because remember when they had Warhorse show up for a match because the fans were like, we want Warhorse, you know? And that's what they decided to do because they like listen to their fans, whereas WWE is like, no, shut up. And again, we love Bill Goldberg, but it's just like, no, shut up. Instead of, you know, having a real program with Kofi Kingston, we're going to put in Bill Goldberg in the SummerSlam match for the WWE Championship. And it's just like, well, I don't know if the fans as a whole are clamoring for Bill Goldberg in 2021.
I'll be the most objective one here because there's no bigger Goldberg fan in the world. If you think you are, you're wrong. He shouldn't be doing this anymore. I love him so much and I get it. No one's going to turn down the money. And he really genuinely loves seeing his kid get to watch what he did. It's part of the experience he didn't get in the 90s. And I get all of it. I don't fault him at all, but his match quality is a shell of itself. You know what I mean? And what I also think, unfortunately, what he's doing, is taking a very, very cool thing, which was his 2016-17 return, which was perfect, like on the money, and kind of watering that thing down because, like, you know, you did it, dude. Like, you righted the wrongs. You pinned Lesnar, and your last match could have been your best match of your career at WrestleMania against Brock Lesnar, when at one point on your resume, that was the worst match of your career. And like, it was just almost like uncanny how perfect it was. And yeah, every time he comes out and people aren't psyched to see him, and every time he comes out and works a okay, not great match, it takes away from that too. It's all part of it, unfortunately. And so, like, as somebody who loves him and will never be the one that says, please stop doing this, I think the moment has passed, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, and it's just, you look at that and it's like, you know, Vince values that over like when was the last time we saw the Demon, Finn Balor, right?
Like, I don't even think they're going to do that again.
Didn't Balor go on record and say that he wanted to slow down the Demon, he wanted to get rid of the Demon, and that's kind of why he went to NXT?
Sure, but even still, like, yeah, it doesn't need to be an every pay-per-view thing because, yeah, that's too much. It should be a big match thing, but it's been years since we've seen the Demon. You know, and that was at one point the most over entrance in all of WWE, all of wrestling. You know,
but you're 100% right. It's like, what, Lashley at SummerSlam should be fighting somebody that's been on the show, working a program worthy of SummerSlam and be excited about it. But because you don't know how to put on weekly TV that builds to something like this on a regular basis anymore, then yeah, we just got to be like, you've heard of Goldberg. He's on the show. Maybe you'll buy it.
Because we're going to have John Cena versus Roman Reigns, which, because John Cena is the greatest of all time, you know, immediately brings in everything that has ever happened between the two of them. And you know exactly what you're watching. And we just don't have, because WWE can't manufacture that. They don't have a equal story for the WWE championship. So we need to have it feel as big. So instead of actually having like Finn Balor show up and be like, I'm going to beat Bobby Lashley, and whether he does or not is irrelevant, you know, you can't build to that story. And, you know, AEW, to their credit, has been able to make you care about almost all of their pay-per-view matches. When they have pay-per-view matches, for the most part, they're really lacking in the women's division, and I hope that that changes soon. But, you know, outside of that, they make you care about all of their matches on their pay-per-views because they're able to build through their weekly programming in a better way than WWE is.
Right, and that's how it should be, because what AEW does is assume they have to earn your purchase, and WWE is at the point now where they're like, between the network making these pay-per-views almost free and everything like that, they're just like, yeah, it's a show, we're putting it on, you'll probably watch it.
Ashley Flair is a trademark name now by the person who actually has that name.
She's
anything
not
else
that,
that
company, unless they really overpay her.
Yeah.
Which they might, but we'll see. Do you guys have anything else you want to get off your chest before we say goodnight?
No, you already let me plug the best used car dealership in all of New England, Washington Street Motors, Weymouth, WSMotors.com. No, it's been awesome. I haven't thought this deeply about wrestling in a long time. It feels good too, and I always love talking to both of you guys, like anytime, any place, anywhere, and really appreciate the time. But I guess my closing comment is, like, it's a weird time to be a citizen of Earth right now. I think the world is pretty upside down, but there's some cool stuff happening everywhere. If you go looking for it, there's some cool stuff happening in wrestling. There always is. I applaud AEW for getting people to get excited about where people might land and new things and new faces and new places. And, you know, WWE still exists and they're doing their thing and there's some cool stuff there too. And so I just hope that in a really, really tough time to be alive, people find some cool stuff out there. And thank you again for the time.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be on this show. Like Chris said, it's been a long time since we kind of get together and kind of talk about wrestling in this public forum. So thank you very much for having us on and giving us the ability to do this. And I am not kidding. Every time you ask, I will be here. Yeah. So you just keep that in the back pocket. Basically, go and support all of your content creators. If there is somebody that you support that does a podcast, that does a Twitch stream, that is a YouTuber or something, like, share, comment, even this show, something like this show right here, even though it might be attached to a larger entity, you know, those likes, those shares, those comments go a huge long way for all of the creators involved. So always support your content creators. And you know, something that we fell out of, both Chris and I, you know, a while, and we kind of found a lot of negativity and kind of fell into that. Wrestling is silly, stupid, and fun, and it should be a place for you to enjoy it. So try not to be negative. Try not to name call and hate each other, because it is silly, fun, and stupid, and we all just like this dumb thing that is grown men solving their violence from 8 to 11 on a school night.
I second that.
The best piece of advice that I can give somebody who doesn't want to sit through 3 hours on Monday, 2 hours on Tuesday, 2 hours on Wednesday, a YouTube show, 2 hours on Friday, 2 hours on Thursday, finding the Ring of Honor syndicated show, which is how Sinclair Broadcasting views their wrestling company, is a syndicated show to just fill time on their channels, or on NESN in this case, in the local Boston market, is treat your wrestling like your sports teams. If your favorite wrestler is Charlotte Flair, then find her matches and watch her matches. If your favorite wrestler is MJF, find his matches, watch his matches, follow his story. If you simplify wrestling into your favorite sports teams, you might have a little bit more of an enjoyable experience, and maybe you'll accidentally find somebody else's story that you want to follow along, or their character to follow along. That's my advice. That's the shorthand version of it.
Sounded very Jerry Springer, and I liked it.
you should take care of yourselves and each other.
Eddie, where can I find you? What are you doing right now?
So
what can you promote?
I got a lot of things to promote.
All right. It's a podcast, so I'm going to kick my feet up and you have as much time as you need, Eddie.
Sure. So because this is a local Boston thing, I'm going to plug my work. I am basically the media producer for Improv Asylum down in the North End. We're back doing shows at 100% capacity, no masks for now. But so that's what we're doing. We got a free show on Wednesdays called We Did It Wednesdays. We have a front patio right on Hanover Street, so you can come and enjoy drinks and stuff. On Sundays, we have a magic show. Which is very fun. And then I am the executive producer on a bunch of podcasts that will be coming through Asylum Podcasting very, very soon. And then you can follow me at the Eddie McCabe on all social media platforms.
Beautiful. Chris, Eddie, it has been my pleasure to talk to you for the last 2 hours, actually. God bless America.
Wow,
2 hours we've been talking wrestling.
First of all, that's a standard early New Age Insiders episode. I just want to say that.
So just to put in perspective, this podcast has never done 2 hours because I have this thing in my mind where it's like, why would anybody download a podcast that's longer than an hour outside of like Bruce Pritchard or Eric Bischoff? And that's just because they're long-winded. I'm just a fan who happens to be employed by a family media company. That's all that I am. Question why people listen to my opinions on things, but God bless them for them listening, and God bless somebody for paying me to do it.
And America. So,
I know, right? So it has been my pleasure to talk wrestling with you guys, and thank you for spending 2 hours with me. Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.